Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
Plans for wind farms in various parts of the country have proved controversial for some and have led to quite a lot of debate. Those in favour say it's an economically viable and environmentally sound alternative to thermal or nuclear generation, while others say more independent thinking has to be done before proceeding. Brian Lally attended the official launch today of a new group, Windaware Ireland. They're calling for better cost-benefit analysis of wind farms and much better community involvement. He first spoke to Senator John Whelan.
There are a number of solutions. We have to have a variety and a mix of energy policies. And the narrative that is being peddled by elements in government that the lights are going to go out and we're going to go back to the tilly lamps, that's absolute rubbish of the highest order, because it's been proven categorically that we have 40% excess generation capacity as we speak. There is no hurry. We have to have an energy forum. The wind industry have gone about in a mischievous, misleading way, claiming that it would be up to 60,000 jobs generated. That now has been proven to be totally flawed, and I don't see how filling the bogs of Mayo and the Midlands with mass concrete is carbon friendly or environmentally friendly.
Henry Fingleton, you're chairman of Windaware Ireland.
There has been very little evidence produced, or no evidence produced, to show that wind is capable of reducing CO2 emissions in any meaningful way. No cost-benefit analysis has taken place, no strategic environmental assessment has taken place. And this policy was devised in 2006, at the height of the boom, so we have loads of time to go back and review this. And our environment as an island nation is so important for us. We use it for our turbid industry, we use it to sell our food, our tourism, and it's very important that we take every step carefully before we damage that environment with a lot of turbines and a lot of infrastructure and grid without analysis. And we could create a lot of jobs, real jobs, not making up promissory jobs, proper jobs right through the country if we embark on a really extensive retrofit insulation programme.
Well, if you look at Denmark, for example, they rely substantially on wind energy, but something like 60% of their wind farms are community owned, and there is real consultation. They have involved communities, they have involved local people, and people see that there is a certain public good in this. If anybody goes and looks at the turbines in Mount Lucas at the moment, 150 metre turbines quite close to homes, etc., you get some concept, some idea of what you're talking about. You know, that's not community involvement. That's imposing wind energy on communities that have no real benefit from it, the vast majority of them, and that they simply have to accept it. Of course, wind energy has to be part of the mix. We need it as part of our energy mix, maybe offshore, maybe some of it onshore. But we need to locate it in places that there's a proper setback distance from homes, from communities, etc. But also, we need policy driven by politicians with the real participation of communities. This kind of thing of the so-called consultation, the best phrase I ever heard to describe what's happening was from a colleague of mine who talked about the illusion of inclusion. And that's what we have here.
Don Moore, you've brought the engineering nous to this meeting this morning. Where do you stand on energy policy?
Well, I suppose our energy policy at the moment is derived from the EU's 2020 targets and its policies, which were developed before the financial crash of 2008, have had an unintended consequence of making electricity in Europe very uncompetitive. Electricity in the US at the moment is half the price of what it is in Europe, and that has meant that a lot of energy-intensive industries are now choosing to make their investments in the US. We're saying the circumstances now are very different to what they were before the financial crash. Mm-hmm. The forecast peak demand for electricity in 2009 will now not be met until the 2020s. And we have 2,000 megawatts surplus generation in the country. We would believe that it's time to pause and say whether we actually need more generation of any kind, renewable or otherwise. One technology, for example, which was proposed, which could be used with coal-fired generation, was carbon capture and storage. That's where, you bury the carbon dioxide in the ground, and it's there long-term. So you reduce CO2 like that. Europe was supposed to actually pioneer this technology, which in turn could have been used in developing countries. It never happened. We have chosen, in fact, instead to concentrate just on renewable energy in Europe. All options should be examined, and we should make decisions based on evidence.
That was Brian Lally reporting for us. Kenneth Matthews is Chief Executive of the Irish Wind Energy Association, and it's the industry body. He joins us. Kenneth, how did we get so quickly to this impasse where you have the wind-aware people accusing you of being mischievous and misleading and creating the illusion of inclusion?
Yeah, firstly, Mary, let me say that, I think that a lot of the information that has been discussed there is highly inaccurate and very selective. It's very much intentionally fueling a negative misconception on wind energy, which is hugely positive in terms of its contribution socially, environmentally and economically to the Irish economy. And, you know, certainly, you know, a number of your people who contributed there and your recording mentioned the CBA. Well, you know, they've ignored the fact that...
What's CBA?
Cost-benefit analysis. They've ignored the fact that there has been a cost-benefit analysis done, and that cost-benefit analysis shows that just from 2014 to 2020, in the next 6 years, the wind sector in Ireland will invest $3.5 billion into the economy, and 40% of that will be retained across the local economy in Ireland.
But again, I'd say to you, and you will take a different view to the views they're taking, which they believe are well held, but how did you get to this impasse, that there is such a huge division between both sides now?
Well, I don't actually believe that there is a significant impasse. You know, we have we commissioned a survey about 9 months ago from Ipsos MRBI, and that showed that 80% of the respondents are very much in favour of the continued development of wind energy in Ireland. And the cost benefit analysis you referred to outlines why they would be in favour, because this sector is contributing to jobs right across the economy. It is the only viable generation source to reduce our CO2 emissions, which is something that we must do. It's part of a binding agreement.
It is the selling of that message. I am sorry I'm just out of time, but you know there is talk of candidates in the local elections, and I suppose that'll be the real measurement of how much support there is for the wind-aware group.
Well, just to say that there are 180 projects that are in delivery right across Ireland, and as a sector, we're very much involved in the community engagement. There are thousands of people living in harmony with wind energy right across Ireland. We would encourage open, factual and well-informed dialogue. Our website is the place to go for that information, and I would also encourage people to rely on evidence-based on facts and evidence-based on rigorous international research.
Kenneth, I'm sorry I don't have more time. We will come back to it again. Thank you very much for joining us. Kenneth Matthews from the Irish Wind Energy Association.